episode 105 of Drunk on Comics. I just want to let you guys know, alcohol is not in my vocabulary. I didn't say that one right. Okay.
Tony knows how to read.
Not really. Not my jokes that I write down, actually.
No, I thought this was our freedom episode, because it's a buck 05. Freedom cost a buck 05.
Okay, Team America.
That was a good one.
Hey, but we do have the Super McKay Brothers team with you today.
Yay!
Matt and Tony here. Everyone else just decided to not show up.
Be busy or something.
Yeah, Kevin is...
Both of them just have legitimate reasons.
Well, yeah, Kevin's on his honeymoon, and Derek has some personal matters, and we are here to keep the fun rolling, I guess.
Well, I guess we could let listeners know that we did try to record this once already when Derek was able to be here, and Tony's computer decided to be an asshole, and...
We don't need to explain why my computer sucks so badly that I want to kill it, but...
Yeah, so this is, like, take two.
Episode 105, take two.
Point one.
Yes, something like that. Well, listeners, we are going to get into Off the Shelf. Off the Shelf, brought to you by us, because we are that cool that we're sponsoring our own program. So I will kick it off with Wildfire number one. This book, written by Matt Hawkins and Linda Sijic, the artist, and they're both the co-creators on this project. It's a different type of book. Within the first page, you kind of see a pro-con approach to genetic modifying food substance stuff.
You mean what Monsanto does to all of our food?
Okay, yes, if that's a real life thingy or jig, fine, sure.
Don't get me started on it.
So, you're already kind of getting a brief bit of what this book is about, because you're thinking, oh, it's about wildfires, and what all is that going to entail with genetically engineering food.
And Smokey the Bear have anything to say about this?
Yes, he wants you to prevent this by eating vegetables that are not genetically modified. But it's also talking about how, with the pros of this, help, you know, solve world hunger, help, you know, this and that. The biggest thing that was reading that this is just, even with the production of food that we need to make, imagine all the pesticides and all the fertilizer and everything and the runoff that would be used for this. So if we could somehow genetically modify them to grow in the desert, that's great. Cons are, what happens when this, you know, messes with the natural cycle of things? And I hope it explores a lot more than that, than what the beginning story is. Because it opens up to Los Angeles in flames, and the city is burning down. So I'm starting to wonder, okay, now I'm starting to think, do these genetically engineered, you know...
Are they all the Firefly, or Flower Power plants from Super Mario Brothers? It gives everybody the ability to flick boogers of fireballs.
That would actually be pretty sweet, and that could be a comic book that we need to create.
Spin-off.
No, but I was, okay, so not knowing anything about this, I was starting to think, is this another one of those trees become alive type things, and now they're burning down the city, because why is the city burning and not the tree, you know, wildfire in the cities? But it's definitely not anything like that. It goes back to that first page that's talking about the pros and cons. And we start with the scientists discussing their viewpoints on doing these experiments. Now, you see the main cast that's... I can't remember all their effing names now. Are in the lab, and they're talking about how when one of the girls on national TV said they are ready with this project. It's done. We can showcase this. That she kind of jumped the gun because they have not successfully produced anything viable, you know, to grow within minutes.
Okay, so the PR person's like, hey, let's move this project forward. Meanwhile, the scientists are like, well, maybe not so quickly.
It's that she got intimidated by one of the con people of this. The people that are like, this is going to be bad for us. This is going to be no good. And she's like, well, it's going to solve world hunger. We're done already. Let's get this moving. So, with that, they need to set up the experiment. Well, with all their plants that have not successfully grown, they take the one thing that has shown improvements, which is a dandelion. And so they're pretty much explaining it. They've done it, you know, 100 times on other plants, but they just wanted to quick use this as their...
example?
Yeah, as their example.
Well, dandelions are edible. You can eat the leaves.
Really?
Yeah, around the plants.
What's it taste like?
Like lettuce. Have you ever had, like, a fancy mixed garden leaf? You've had dandelion plants.
Ew.
Yeah. just plant though. But I mean, it's not something you want to eat every day, but they are edible. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So now we learn some real truth to this.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yes, it is. Ultimately, they have this press conference, and they are showing how their genetic modifying system works. We have a protester who, of course, jumps up and causes all havoc and knocks over the containment unit. Now, you see it gets cracked, but you're assuming, okay, nothing bad could happen from this. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's a comic book. What I ultimately love the most about this is the big reveal of how Los Angeles is catching on fire. And I am going to freaking spoil it. Because what you start to see is the dandelions, they turn, and do they still call dandelions whether they're in yellow form or
yeah, I think
white,
the little
poofy form?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
okay.
It's just one of them is a seed plant, and one's the flower that has the pollen and needs to be reproduced, and then it turns into the seed. I don't know. I'm not a botanist. I just play one on TV.
So, we see that these seeds start flying around Los Angeles, and then, the next day, they have multiplied so much that there's just all these little white...
So, it snowed dandelion seeds?
Pretty much so. And the scientists are getting woken up on, from phone calls, watching the news, saying, these dandelions are all over Los Angeles. There's people that are worried about this, possibly causing fire hazards if it continues. And that's kind of where you start to see, this is where Los Angeles starts burning down. That's a unique way to destroy a city with fucking dandelions.
Yeah.
Now, I am hoping that there's some other genetic stuff that comes in play and it's not just death by dandelions. But even then, that'd be pretty badass for...
So it's a good opening chapter for...
Oh, for sure.
Is this an ongoing series or a mini-series?
From what I believe, it's a mini-series.
Cool.
One of the things that I did want to say, too, the art was just phenomenal, just popping off with the colors. And also, it's kind of heavy dialogue, too. There is some real, at least science-sounding. I'm not a scientist, so I don't know. But it sounds scientist-y enough that I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah. So definitely a pickup, and what'd you have, Matt?
I'm going to review Uber number 14, written by Kieran Gillen. Art in this one is by Gabriel Andrade, and colors by Digicore Studios. Uber, I started this book when it first came out. I saw Uber, and I'm like, those look like super Nazis. And they're like, yeah, this is about super Nazis. I'm like, I gotta pick up that book. Because I'm, I like history.
You like Nazis?
Yes! No, I hate Nazis. Nazis and zombies are, like, the two best villains because nobody cares when they get killed.
True.
So, Uber is, but it's more of a, it's less of a superhero book and more of a book about war and what humans will do when they have power. And so this book, I wanted to talk about it a few episodes or issues back when they did issue 11, when Hitler died, because that made me happy. I mean, I usually don't smile, but there's something about killing Hitler that just brings a smile to my face. So it started with Hitler being killed back then, and then they had a couple of issues where they focused on other characters, gave a little background, a little feature pieces, and now we're back to...
Were they, like, lieutenants of the armies, or, like, kind of made up for... Because obviously this is...
It's a big book. You've got the Russian side of the story, you've got the, essentially the British side of the story, you got the German side of the story. They even did a few of them with the Pacific theater, where they had the Japanese and the Americans fighting. So there's so much to jump around. So he takes a couple issues, and he was focusing on other characters for a little while, but still building them all up. I've said it before, Kieran Gillen is one of my favorite writers right now, and I think that this one particularly he has a lot of heart and passion for, and so I'm glad that he's getting to tell this story and run it out. So this issue starts with a picture of Hitler being dead, which again brings a smile to your face. And then you find out a little bit more. Goebbels comes in and is like, oh no, Hitler's dead, this sucks. Everyone needs to leave the room. And so the guy who killed him, who's one of their Ubers, one of their battleships, the most powerful of these Ubermen, he's like happy because he's like, yeah, I killed Hitler. That's what I wanted to do. And so he goes and talks to one of the other high-ranking Nazis, Anita Scheele, and he's kind of explaining it's done, and they're like, oh, this is good. And then they do a little flashback about how the Uber program got started, and they show the creation of one of their other battleships down in the bowels, like all these tunnels, like underneath Berlin, or whatever secret Nazi place they have. And so they're empowering one of their battleships, and then you find out that there was... So the Germans have three battleships, but then you find out Battleship Zero, the first patient to have undergone this transformation into Uber. And it didn't go so well for that person. Because essentially now they're this monstrous, blobbish... You can't tell if it was a man or a woman before, because it's got moobs, and it's just kind of this blobby, disgusting mess.
And where's that thing wreaking havoc on?
It's in tunnels underneath, I think, Germany, or someplace in Nazi territory, because that's where they're doing all their experiments. So you get this, like, real monster, like, gripping underneath it, which is juxtaposed by the fact that the British have created their own monster, but she's not crazy. She's just grotesquely tankish and stuff. It's gonna be interesting when you get there. You gotta really read the series to get into all the details. But this was one of those moments in comics where you're like, yeah, that's pretty disgusting. I don't know if I needed to see that. And so Kieran Gillen, in his letter at the end of the book, which are always worth reading, he shares with us what his page description was for that page. And his description is actually much more disgusting than what actually ended up on the page.
Well, like he was describing what it should look like.
Yeah. Or... yeah, it's like its lower face is stretched, mouth and esophagus collapsed like the from the throat like a serpent. The best one, though, is where's the part where he talks about his testicles?
Okay, we don't need to...
Okay, well, they talk about, is this a man or a woman? They go, well, maybe there's these testicles hanging out, or maybe they're swollen ovaries. We don't know, because it's been so misshaped. So this whole idea of whoever this person was a person, but they don't want to, he doesn't want to genderize it as this was a male or female. Just, this was a person. Remember, it was a person first, and now it's this. So that was disgusting. But then, anyways, at the end, the real dick Nazi, the very Aryan battleship, is mad at the guy who killed Hitler because he suspects that he killed Hitler. Except then Goebbels comes in and says, guys, it's okay, it's okay, Hitler's alive. And we get a picture of Hitler standing triumphant at the very end of the issue. So the book starts with dead Hitler and then it ends with an alive Hitler.
Is that the real Hitler, is it a stunt double?
With Goebbels involved, I'm sure that there's some kind of propaganda going on. Like, he had this guy in reserve and was just waiting for him, or it's a Hitler clone at this point.
Well, life model decoy.
It's a life model decoy of Hitler. I don't know.
Him and Nick Fury were like, how many do you have left?
So I'm, either way, I'm just intrigued by the story still. It's great, and hopefully we'll get to see this Hitler die, too. So.
Well, you could read the book backwards, and he's alive, and then he's dead. Call it Reboo.
Reboo. You better. Yeah. So anyways, go pick it up. It's from Avatar Press. They're on issue 14, but I know the whole first story arc, the first 12 issues, should be out in graphic novels here. And pick it up, especially if you are a fan of alternative histories and World War II. It's definitely worth reading.
Well, let's get into some news and notes. And
all right.
One of the things that needs to be said for this past week was E3 happened.
Mm-hmm.
E3, for anyone that lives under a rock and doesn't quite know nerd culture, is the Electronic Entertainment Expo, which debuts pretty much all the games and the new hardware and stuff that is going to be coming up throughout the next couple years. There was no new hardware debuted. However, me and Matt can quite say, we are kind of more Nintendo fanboys, and no matter where your fighting comes from, whether it's DC versus Marvel, independents versus superheroes, Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo, we're just going to tell you that Nintendo took the cake at this E3. And many insiders are saying that as well. But besides that, some great games coming out. We got the new Halo Master Chief collection. Pretty much going to have all of 1 through 4, as well as the beta for the new Halo 5 coming out.
So all the Halo games in one game?
Yes, on one disc for the new Xbox One. Mainly because you can't replay old games on the new system, so they're at least doing nice enough to put multiple games onto one disc.
You just have to buy it again.
Yep. Splatoon looks like an awesome gunmen game slash using ink and many different
devices. On Nintendo?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, we got Smash Brothers coming out. One of the most amazing looking games, which kind of tie it back into what we do here with comic books, is Batman Arkham Knight. Mm-hmm. You can look, just YouTube some of the gameplay. It looks sick as hell. And
yeah, that's one of my regrets is that I haven't yet been able to play the Arkham series. I've watched other people play it, and I'm like, I want to be Batman. I mean, I want to be Batman. But never got a chance to play those yet. So
yeah,
it looks beautiful, and it looks like the game's going to be just as fun.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot more news coming out from E3 since it just wrapped up. However, just want to kind of give a shout-out to some of the cool things that we at least saw, and maybe might even do a separate podcast on our thoughts on some of the new video games, because it's been quite a while since we've even mentioned video games. I think the last time was really last year when I started talking about wanting to play the Deadpool game. And
oh, yeah. How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, shut up.
So Marvel is going to time travel their books. The Avengers titles are going to jump 8 months into the future to April.
And if you were here a month ago on a podcast, Matt, you would know that we already mentioned that.
Oh. Well, so, then why was it in news for this week?
Because it explains a lot more. We knew that they were jumping 8 months ahead. We had no fucking clue what that meant. Finally, Hickman has come out and kind of said what that exactly means. So coming this September, there's going to be two Avengers books. These books, where if you were reading them in chronological order, should technically come out in the spring. They are taking these books and inserting them in September to where you're going to see stuff that's not even happened yet. And not even happened, not just in the Avengers books, but in the X-Men books, within Fantastic Four.
With any of the Marvel
within,
books.
I mean, Spider-Verse is coming out in October. And in these Avengers books, we'll have some repercussions that already are going to happen within that.
Yeah,
so it's really a kind of a mind fuck of how it's happening, and I find the concept really cool because that's going to take a lot of work on Marvel's part to make sure stuff lines up to have this bookend come out. But not only that, it's also going into pretty much talk about the last part of the incursions that have been happening in New Avengers.
Yeah, so they're going to kind of wrap up that big crossover storyline of the worlds colliding.
And I do hope that this does, since it has the, you know, title of Time Runs Out within the event, that it will kind of stop doing the damn time travel as as a plot device. Now, as I said, normally we're already in Original Sin right now, and whenever they're jumping the guns for the next event, it's kind of annoying, but this is at least something refreshing.
Well, and one of the things that they write here, too, is that those books are going to jump 8 months into the future, and then the next month they'll only be 7 months into the future, and then 6 months into the future. And I think what's neat about it is that it gives you this juxtaposition. It's called Time Runs Out, and you can kind of feel between your Avengers books and the other Marvel books, you can kind of feel that time compressing, getting to that most important climactic event. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's going to be a risk. It's going to take a lot of coordination, and it could suck. But at the same time, I think that they're trying for something that could be really exciting and build a good story.
A big thing that has kind of been rumored by Jim Starlin, but I guess not even rumored, but more or less, there was kind of a rift between Marvel and Jim, which there has been in the past as well. Jim Starlin, the person who pretty much created Thanos, Adam Warlock, all those things.
A lot of those cosmic characters.
Yes. And pretty much it was put out there on his Facebook page that he wasn't allowed to use Adam Warlock within his planned books that he has coming up for Marvel. And he started speculating that was because of the end of, what was it? What movie was it? Iron Man?
No, the first Avengers.
No, it wasn't the first Avengers when they showed the Collector.
Oh, Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, Thor the Dark World. Where in the background of the Collector's spaceship, you see a cocoon. Well, what normally gets reborn in a cocoon in
butterflies.
This world?
Butterflies come out of cocoons.
Okay, I guess they do. Okay. But also, so does Adam Warlock.
Oh, okay.
So he's thinking that Adam Warlock's going to be in the movie, and if so, is not allowed to be used for comic book
form. Yeah, there was essentially something put out through Marvel that this character is unusable. And so that, you know, of course, made Starlin feel like, hey, I created him, and I've got plans for him. Why can't I use him?
Yep. So now the rift has been settled, and he is able to use him into some upcoming books. But that's kind of cool if he is part of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie or any of these coming up soon. So that would be sweet to see.
Yep. Coming out in August, there is a steampunk version of Battlestar Galactica. Fans of the show and fans of steampunk might try to pick that up. I know from what I know of Battlestar Galactica, it's a pretty fun show. It's got a lot to do. It's one of those classic sci-fis that you really should be aware of. And if you've got, you know, 20 hours, 50 hours of time, then watch
it. Does it have a lot of stars that battle in the Galactica region?
Sort of like that. It's not Battlestar Galactica. Like Tony thought originally. But no, so there's a steampunk version coming out in comic form. Let's see, there's another real big one. DC has announced a potential timeline for their movies. And this comes from comicvine.com that we get the source for this. But it looks like the movies are going to be they're going to have 7 movies coming out in 2016. And 2017.
Yeah, now this is just rumors right now. However, looking at some of these, we already know that a Sandman movie is within the works. Now this isn't going to necessarily come out as Justice League.
I was saying, this is Sandman as in Morpheus and the Endless, not Sand. Well, they used to have a hero called Sandman who had a bag of sand that put people to sleep. I don't see them making a movie of that, but
yes. So, okay. Most people know which Sandman movie we're talking about.
I was unsure.
It's speculated a Shazam movie, which I could see that, but I've not heard any rumors up until now of these things. Flash and Green Lantern, actually, they have a Wonder Woman. I know this is bullshit now. They have Wonder Woman slated. So, never mind, folks. This can't be real.
No, but what I find interesting is that you've got 3 movies coming out in 2016, 3 of them in 2017, and then another Man of Steel 2 slated for 2018. I just wonder if that is trying to put too many movies out. Excuse me. In too short a time. I know Warner Brothers is a big studio, and they could probably balance all those projects. And I know DC's in a hurry to catch up with Marvel and get more of their properties out there in movie form. But I'm just curious if that's overambitious, and I'm sure we'll see changes to it. But even delaying Batman Superman back to 2016, I thought it was originally slated to come out in 2015.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Samsung is, teaming up with Marvel to bring you some free comics. So if you like free comics, you should definitely check out the Galaxy Tab S. This direct challenger of the Apple iPad is coming out this July, and users will receive a free 3-month subscription to Marvel Unlimited, their pretty much digital service that has a ton of books, all back catalog. That's actually a pretty good deal.
Especially if you have 3 months to do nothing but, you know, read comics.
Yeah, and if you're getting a tablet, why not get that? So that's kind of cool. So listeners that are looking in the prospect of possibly picking up an e-reader type book, that would be one that can give you some fun.
Marvel looks like the Doctor Strange movie is getting more, becoming a more of a reality, as Marvel Studios has announced a director attached to the film, Scott Derrickson, who's also known for his works of Sinister and Deliver Us Up from Evil. So now that they have a director attached, you know, obviously there's more push for the movie to be made. So yeah, I mean, not much else to say about that.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
I mean, I could say more about it, but next news.
So something that Derek wanted us to kind of mention, but only in the sense of WTF, mate. Vincent D'Onofrio is going to play the Kingpin on the Netflix's Daredevil. And so that we have him cast is kind of news, but the biggest thing is he just doesn't look fat enough. I mean, are they going to be doing some CGI?
Fat suit. I think they'll probably put him in a fat suit, kind of the way they did Eddie Murphy in the Nutty Professor movies.
Or half of his movies. that has pretty much become his shtick, just like Adam Sandler's shtick has become not making good movies.
No, maybe they could bulk the guy up, but from what I heard, he's not incredibly tall. I mean, that's not really necessarily a problem in filmmaking or because you can do camera angles to make people look more intimidating and big. So, I don't know. It does seem odd, but I guess we'll have to trust their casting choice.
That's true. Marvel hasn't really let us down since...
Recently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say most all of their picks in all their movies, like Robert Downey Jr., how could you not pick a better Tony Stark?
I can't think of anybody else now. But, I mean, I loved Michael Clark Duncan, but I did not like him as the Kingpin in the Daredevil movie.
Yeah, it just didn't fit right.
He definitely was the size. The problem is that I think Michael Clark Duncan's too nice. And so I could get him as the thug part, but I couldn't see him as the mastermind part just because I think he's a teddy bear. So.
A big teddy bear that can crack your skull.
He was a very large man.
Do you have anything else that you found out, Matt?
So, I came across this randomly on Facebook. Pearls Before Swine, which is a comic strip, runs in the newspaper, they do it online. Their writer came out with the announcement that Bill Watterson from Calvin and Hobbes actually was a guest artist on three of their strips recently this week, the week of June 7th, I think?
Yes.
And... he was asked not to announce that Bill was at all involved in the project until after the strips ran.
Well, one of the big things is, if you've ever read Calvin and Hobbes, it's been one of those cherished, you know, comic books from when you were younger. And Bill Watterson kind of walked away from the comic book world. In fact, he's been a huge recluse.
There's a big documentary on him on Netflix.
Yeah, many people don't know... like, where he lives, where anything, he stays out of the spotlight. He's won many awards that he's never really accepted them because he just...
he wants to be left alone.
He's a hermit, yes. Yeah. And so that he was reached out to this writer of the Pearls Before Swine, forget his name, but that he reached out to him through a comic book strip that he thought was funny to say, hey, I would like to, you know, kind of... help out and do a strip for you. And the way that they work through it is very intriguing to get the thoughts behind who Bill Watterson is and how it came about.
Yeah, essentially, and I'm still trying to find the name of the Pearls Before Swine creator. Sorry. He was being mocked by a second grader girl who was going to draw better. And so Bill Watterson... came in as the guest artist drawing as a second grader because one of the things that in Pearls Before Swine that they always mock is the art because it's, you know, it is what it is. So that's how Bill, he got involved in the project, and really go check those out. Search for Pearls Before Swine. You can find them. And it was just really nice to see that Bill is still trying to be involved in the comic strip.
And that he's still alive.
That he's still alive.
So. Yep. One last thing that I got is talking about the Spider-Verse, you know, giant overarching event that's going to be happening this October, as we have previously mentioned, is called The Edge of the Spider-Verse, where it's bringing some new creators in to create some Spider-Man books. These are all going to be one-shots, and pretty much you can call them all what-ifs, because whenever you do a different universe, that is a whole what-if. That's pretty much what Marvel has said. Every what-if story actually exists somewhere, form, shape, or another in a universe, which is why anyone that goes through, like, Fantastic Four, why the Exiles, any of those time stream crossing people can run into some of these what-if scenarios. So it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out. The one that I'm looking forward to is what looks like Gwen Stacy becoming Spider-Woman-ish.
Okay.
So, and then there's like going to be a Spider-Man noir type one. So almost looking at that last Spider-Man game.
Yeah.
And having some stories written on about those characters.
Okay.
Well, for some of them, so.
Is the Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe going to be in there? Because I heard he's coming back, and...
Well, not in this, because these are all different.
But that's a different reality, so...
Yeah, but they're not going to highlight him when he's got his own ongoing series. These are five standalone books to explain other Spider-Men.
Okay.
Not the main ones.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Yes, but he may be in the Spider-Verse, may not be. And if you've read Ultimate Spider-Man 2, you might know, spoiler alert, that he is back. So, there you go. That's about it I have for news. Matt, do you have anything else?
Nah.
Alright, well, what do you want to get into next?
I want to do booze in a book.
You want to do booze in a book? Alright, you can do it. Since it's our podcast, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, booze in a book, brought to you by Ink Whiskey. Check them out, they make these really awesome retro video game flasks. Check them out at inkwhiskey.com. This week, I'm going to pair the Earth-X saga with a Bee Nectar, the Dude's Rug, which is a hard cider with tea and chai spices. Now, both of these are exquisite tastes. They're very delicious. You'll enjoy both of them. But they're also something special. You're not going to just... They're not your every run-of-the-day mill hard cider or comic book. They're something that's really going to bring some fulfillment to you. And the ultimate connection, I think, between the Dude's Rug and Earth-X is that it really ties the whole room together, or really ties the Marvel Universe together. The Earth-X series, if you are unaware of, had story and character design by Alex Ross, story and script by Jim Kruger, and a slew of other artists who participated in the art and colors and letters. It essentially tells an overarching story of how everything in the Marvel Universe, from the Celestials to the Asgardians to the Skrulls, and why certain people have powers. They put it all together in one story creation, so it really feels like one continuous origin story that really draws the whole thing together. If you haven't read this story, it's a classic. It is certainly worth reading. It's a big read, and so you'll get a lot of hours of enjoyment out of it. And so pick it up. And pick up a Bee Nectar of the Dude's Rug, because it was delicious.
I will definitely do that. I've already read Earth-X, so I will get the drink.
Reread it again.
So it is Father's Day weekend, and something that I've kind of just been thinking about lately is, you know, fathers, since, duh, that's what you'd be thinking on it. And thinking about superheroes in particular, many of them don't really have fathers when they're superheroes. I mean, they did growing up, and ignoring the obvious, you know, Peter Parker / Batman, you know, losing their parents early in life. Where are the parents now? Where is Bruce Banner's father? I mean, when you think of it, is this a prerequisite to being a superhero, is not having a father? Yes, Captain America's father is definitely dead. But
yeah.
But you look at, I mean, fuck, name anyone. Oh, I guess Thor's father. Yeah,
Thor's got a father.
Okay, so that's one.
All right.
I mean, you could say Franklin Richards.
Clark Kent or Superman's got a father.
No, he doesn't. They're dead.
Oh, they're dead now?
Yeah.
Oh, did that happen in the New 52?
Yeah, it happens in every universe. He's got no parents, even his adopted parents.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of his adopted
parents.
And
he's a superhero now. I'm not talking about younger age. Look at a super character now. Flash. Do they ever talk about Flash parents? I don't know. I mean, I think Aquaman's parents are dead. Not exactly sure. You never see the parents, and you start wondering why some of these people become villainous sometimes, because they don't have that guidance.
Is it like the Disney theory that moms are always gone in Disney movies so that the kids can get in trouble?
Is that true?
Yeah, if you notice all the Disney movies, how many times is the mom dead but the dad's still around?
How many times in the Disney movies do you see the kids just being little shits anyways and getting their way and realizing, oh, that worked out to our favor?
Yeah. But no, most of the Disney movies have to do with mom's dead or gone or never in the picture, but dad's still around.
Well, not even not having dads, just the family, whatever.
The family unit.
I mean, Magneto, I guess, would be the prevalent father figure of his kids.
But that's always kind of get brought up, like, in the, ooh, I'm your father. Yeah, but we don't listen to you. Cyclops is Cable's father, but Cable looks way older with the white hair.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah, and I guess Cyclops' father, too.
I guess, yeah, you do have... I mean, there is a book right now that actually is about a father and son bonding with Corsair and Cyclops from the past. But that, I think that's much more a modern, you know, story than it was in the classic origins.
All right, so you're kind of ruining my theory here of father figures, but not really, because I could do a lot more research to think of...
Well, the thing, too, is that when they're adults, though, they're supposed to be their own person, and that the importance of the parental units, or especially the father figure, was in their early development. I mean, Tony Stark is constantly going on about how he was never good enough for his dad, or his dad was this, his dad. Rarely does he say, oh, my mom felt this way about me. No, it's all about Howard Stark and how he was. And so I think that the father figures are there, but they're definitely not there physically, but their presence is still being felt. That people, there's a lot of them are doing it because of their parents. I think Doom's a big exception because he's really all about his mom. He's got mommy issues. Yeah, well, Cyborg from DC.
What about him?
His dad is the one that created all the cyborg technology that keeps him alive at Star Labs.
Okay, so we're picking a few that we can think of across this whole spectrum of superheroes and everything.
That's true.
In which case, when you're looking at that, there really aren't a lot of fathers.
But one of our listeners was out there saying, Cyborg, what about Cyborg? I could hear him with my super senses.
And so you had to just mention that for him.
I think you do bring up a very valid point. Fathers, most parents seem to be absent in the superhero universe. And I think there could be a lot of really good storylines, but I find that whenever there is a father, a lot of times there's a villainous connection. Count Nefarious, his daughter is Madame Mask, and even in the Sins, the original Sins series right now, you have Exterminatrix, whose father is Dr. Midas.
Yep.
So you get them here and there. I guess all the Kree's father is the Supreme Intelligence. Black Bolt's got us. You get a lot of the, you know, they've got young children. I mean, Reed Richards has Franklin Richards. Black Bolt and Medusa have a son someplace. So no, I'm going to debunk your theory. It's not that they're completely absent, but they just don't seem to be that important to the heroes. They're just...
So the heroes don't really care about their parents. But we at Drunken Comics do. So we do want to wish everyone a happy Father's Day who is a father, who may potentially be a father already. Or
happy
who
illegitimate be. Father's Day, too, for those of you out there. So
I'm going to go buy myself a gift. All right. Let's quick get into Indie Turnpike. Are you going to make your noise?
No, but I'm going to say it's brought to you this week by Daw Apparel.
Yes, go to Daw Apparel to get all your apparel needs.
Mm-hmm. We got some really awesome Drunk on Comic shirts there.
But not just Drunk on Comic shirts. You can find a ton of different already screen printed shirts or create your own. you can find almost anything there that you'd want. And don't forget to type in the promo code DOC20 to save yourself 20%.
What does DOC stand for?
Drunk on Comics.
Yes, and you'll save 20%.
All right, so this week's Indie Turnpike is very, very, I would say, indie and very, very not for children.
I was going to say, is it Indiana Jones?
It's not that indie.
Okay.
It's Dix, To the End of Time, like, number one. Written by Garth Ennis, art by John McCrea, colors by Digicore Studios. This came out from Avatar Press, and for anyone that has read Garth Ennis before, very kind of anti-hero, against the norm type, you know, writer. And this is so fucking against the norm.
Is I know from Avatar, is it graphic in, like, horrible displays of violence?
Not horrible displays of violence, just grossness of fart and dick jokes being drawn as cocks.
Okay.
It's not a, as I said, a kid's book. And I was just kind of intrigued by this book of being a bunch, about two dicks, Dougie and Ivor, and wondering what the hell this is about. I've never read any of the previous iterations of this, but this one in itself pretty much had me going from the dialogue. Definitely these Irish guys who are using the word wanks and bollocks. They use bollocks, and they spelt it the way that we don't like to spell it, me and Matt, but that Derek has driven into our heads that we should be written. And it starts off with someone who had recently passed away, and you're just reading this comic book just being like, okay, these two guys, they're just talking about life and whatever and death and yelling at each other and swearing at each other and all this and that, and you kind of have them taking that drink of whiskey, you know, over the grave, and they're going to pour one out. Well, of course, Dougie drinks it all, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, we don't have anything to pour out. We have something to pour out, and this is where they start pissing on the grave. And this is where I start realizing this is the type of book that this is going to be. These guys are dicks to everyone, even their dead, deceased friend. So, going into this book further, Dougie comes up with the thought of they want to be superheroes. And it was probably one of the most made me laugh out loud moments is when there was this bat flying around when they're trying to come up with who they should be. And he's like, will you kill the thing? I can't be inspired with that fucking rodent flying around. And I just thought that was great. And until then, he also, on the next page, brought out his dickerang, a.k.a. a dildo, to try to whack the thing, which his partner goes, why do you have those? He goes, well, it's going to be like our calling cards. And I'm just like, wow, they are definitely, definitely fucked up in what they're going to be doing. So, ultimately, getting into the rest of the story when they break into the mobster type people's houses and kind of start hearing the plans and then are naturally caught, leaving you on a cliffhanger, if you can understand kind of some of the dialogue, because there's still a lot of words that I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was an insult, but I have no fucking clue what that is.
You don't speak Irish?
No, so I'm going to start using those on you guys, and hopefully one of you can enlighten me to tell me what the fuck that is. It was very good, very humorous, and the reason why I enjoyed it so much is because it felt like us, though. It felt natural for these two assholes to be just piss-mouthed, you know, yelling at each other, kind of like what we do on a normal basis, so.
Except the Irish are so much more poetic when they're insulting you.
How so?
Dang it, I need to drink more. So, Dix.
Yes, that was what they were, and that's what it is.
I'm glad you wrapped that up nicely.
Yes. Well, you got any thing for Last Call?
I got a couple books here for Last Call. God is Dead, number 14, came out. Still a very interesting very interesting read. That's all I have to say.
That book has changed so much in what I thought it was going to be from what it was to what it is now, if that all made sense.
Did you see there in August they're going to be the Book of Acts or something like that? They've got like five different artists or writers who are going to write stories in this timeline. One of them is Alan Moore. is adding to stories in this. So, I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but...
Because I don't know what's happening now.
Well, this is two books in one. Well, I mean, when's the last time you've reviewed this? Like, really reviewed it?
Really reviewed it was a couple months ago.
Okay, because, yeah, you got the two different storylines. You get half the book, which is about kind of what's happening to everyone, and then you get this still side story with Cupid and a new god of death. So, weird stuff.
Original Sins, 1 of 5, kind of felt like a previous book. I mean, the first story you read, you're like, okay, this is kind of cool. It's kind of about Deathlok, and you're kind of reading it. But then, I mean, it ends with, and follow Deathlok, #1, coming out from Marvel.
Yeah, it felt very much like, did we really get suckered into buying a book about previews?
Yeah. So. And then, I mean, it was good. I thought the best one was the Lockjaw.
Yeah, there's a little two-page story with Lockjaw. The point of Original Sins is they all got told what, you know, a secret that has been buried long time. That only the Watcher.
Mainly, this is just going to be taken off from the main story event to kind of fill in some other random shit they want to start talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, most of it felt like you have the preview from Deathlok, you have a little two-page funny strip about Lockjaw, and then the whole rest of it was about Young Avengers. And one, I didn't realize that Marvel Boy was part of the Young Avengers, and also the Hood is reintroduced. And last time we saw the Hood, he was going after the Infinity Gauntlet, and it was back in prison. So how did he get out? I'm not sure. I do like that villain a lot, but I mean, I really would have called this Original Sins Young Avengers, and with a Deathlok preview. And you just could have put the little Lockjaw in any of them. I'll put it in all of them because it was funny.
Yeah, that was the best story.
It really was the best.
Federal Bureau of Physics #11 came out, and I don't say this cover is just best on tap, mainly because, well, I mean, it's just food. It's just an egg. I mean, it's not really pretty, but it's making me hungry, so. But that's good. Astro City 13. Just, oh man, these independent books are amazingly good.
Mm-hmm. We have Deadpool #30 with the Original Sin tie-in. Deadpool really was at Dazzler's concert.
Yeah, she may not have remembered it, but yeah, he made it happen.
You know, real neat idea of taking one of the mutants whose ability is to make light out of sound and turning her into a vampire hunter. I think that's really awesome. What else you got, Tony?
All New X-Men #28, and that's it that I have read so far.
Last one I have is New Avengers #19. Still loving it. They're fighting. They're about to fight the Great Society, which is kind of a cheap ripoff of the Justice League, but in many ways, much much superior.
Oh, actually, I did lie. I did read Transformers. I have some back issues I definitely need to read because I'm kind of confused on what the fuck's going on. But they're Transformers, so who doesn't love Transformers?
Michael Bay. Why does he keep hurting them?
Yeah. All right. He doesn't like turtles either.
I like turtles. So that's our off-the-shelf this, or our last call this week. As you know, Derek was here. He'd have a lot more.
Yes. Definitely check us out if wherever you get this. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. You can download us straight from our website.
Check us out on Facebook. We got some, you know, always got some funny memes and stuff over there. Twitter us at Drunk on Comics.
We promise we won't bite, and we will try to answer your questions. And frickin' yeah, ask us some questions that you want us to get answered, because
we'll totally.
I think that's something that we should start doing now, is using our minds. Put them together to answer some things.
Yeah, Tony needs to do something with the few remaining brain cells he has left.
Yes, I do.
So, ladies and gentlemen out there, keep reading those comics, and we'll be back with you next week to talk about them. I'm a luck man up in flames. Down to down, I'm the one to blame. I think it's time.